The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
All right, we're going to look ahead now to all of the weekend's sporting action, and I'm joined by sports journalist Daniel Hussey. Daniel, you're very welcome. We were just saying there in the break, no one cares about the World Cup, do they? Until next Thursday, and then we all care about the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's all we'll be talking about.
Yeah, the kickoff times are pretty wild though, Claire. We've a lot of them.
In the States, but we'll work it. You know what I mean? It'll be fine.
Normally when it's in the States, they tailor it for the European market, but they just have refused to do that this time.
All right.
We're going to go through the trenches, I think, next
different
few weeks.
Boss in town. Well, let's come back to our own, because the Leinster Hurling Championship is tomorrow, and it is Dublin v Galway at 6 o'clock. What do you reckon?
Oh, firstly, as a dub, it's quite exciting. I mean, it's a rare thing of the hurlers being far superior than the footballers. But I'm expecting a good bandwagon and a good strong crowd there tomorrow evening. So it's not just Dublin that are basically chasing the first Leinster title in years, 2013, but second since 1961. But Galway are on a bit of a barren run as well. I think 2018, their last one. So expecting two strong supports from both sets of fans. And I'm hoping for a great game, yeah. But I think this is a massive opportunity for the dubs. Where last year they obviously beat Limerick, sort of caught them on the hop in the All-Ireland quarterfinal, if people remember, after they lost to Cork, which obviously we'll get to. But then they disappointed when they sort of went gung-ho against a Cork side and got hammered in the semi-final. But being quietly impressed by them this year, they keep getting better and better. And expecting a massive performance. Galway are going to be tough, but as a dub, I'm quite excited for
that. Well, look, you know, when you've Kilkenny off your back, your blood is up, right?
Well, it's getting them out of the Leinster final was great, and it was a bonus that they're out of the All-Ireland series altogether, which is, it's probably the story of the Hurling Championship. It's a crazy thing, and it's great for Offaly, who sort of have all these young players coming through. It was taking them a long time to get there. But yeah, Kilkenny is the story, and not people have been bored of Kilkenny, but their domination of Leinster, maybe not the All-Ireland series as we know last few years, but Leinster Hurling has been huge, so to have them gone from Dublin and Galway is great.
But sometimes with a big game like that, that can be your final. Yeah. Do you have that fear? We've done that now.
Yeah, small bit. And what's happened the last few years with Dublin is low floor, high ceiling. So they produce these fantastic performances and can't back it up, like last year, Limerick in the quarterfinal and Cork in the semi-final. But this year they have managed to put a run of results, not just results, but performances. So while that performance against Kilkenny was great, there was still plenty to work on. It is the Parnell Park factor, though. I think Dublin played very well in Parnell Park. Can they produce a proper performance in Croke Park, which they'll need to, not just in the Leinster final, but maybe beyond that as well.
That's Saturday at 6 o'clock. Then on Sunday at 2 o'clock at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Cork and Dublin. Like that's
or
the
Cork
big...
Limerick, yeah.
That's the big. Sorry, Cork Limerick. My head is still in Dublin. That is the big one though, isn't it?
Yeah, huge.
And the question everybody's asking is, can anyone stop Cork?
Oh, well, if anyone can, it's Limerick. This is basically the third big clash, I would call it, of the year. They had the National League final, the Munster group stage game. And all things being equal, I think both these counties will expect to see each other again in an All-Ireland final, as both would be separate sides of the draw. But it's a massive game. And we saw last year with Limerick ultimately losing the hurling or the Munster final on penalties. Everyone presumed it would be Cork-Limerick All-Ireland final, and Limerick got caught in the hop, as we keep mentioning, against the Dubs. So for me, it's a huge game for both sets, both counties, and whether whoever can go through that front door, I feel, will be in a much better place for the All-Ireland series. Stating the obvious, there's obviously still a Munster championship for both sides on the line, but for both teams, they'll be looking at the All-Ireland
series. They'll be looking ahead at the next one.
Yeah.
Now, in the rugby, we've heard in the last little while this morning about Andy Farrell staying on till 2031. Was that ever in question?
The length of the contract is probably a small bit. I mean, there was talk of uncertainty with Andy Farrell, and he was linked, I think, with Saracens. There was talk reported, I think, in the Irish Indo and a few other places, that perhaps a move back home would have suited him in terms of his family circumstances. So in that sense, a little bit of surprise. From the RFU's point of view, small bit of a risk, I would say, sticking with him all the way to 2031 before a Rugby World Cup in 2027.
It's a long contract, isn't it?
Yeah, I always go back to Eddie O'Sullivan before they signed the contract before the 2007 World Cup, might have been 2011 World Cup, and not seeing it beyond that. So like there is that risk, particularly a year before it. I think the RFU thought Andy Farrell, and he is, in fairness, will be one of the most sought after coaches. He also coached the Lions and stuff, so I can see how they ultimately ended up on this. I know 2031 seems ages away. It is 5 years away, but it is a full World Cup cycle and another year before this World Cup cycle. In an ideal world, you'd wait till next year and then do it, but Farrell might have moved on by then. So I think they had to make
a decision. So they were making a sort of strategic decision. Like when you look at the duration of the contract, it's probably all a money game, because if you compare that to the new Liverpool boss, they've given him 2 years, right?
Yes.
But that's to prevent having to give him a big bag of money if they don't like him after 6 months.
Pretty much. Now, I've read somewhere that Iriola loves doing these 2 year contracts, but I think that would have suited Liverpool down to the ground, to be honest with you. We've seen this with Chelsea giving 8 year contracts to managers and sacking them after 6 months. So Liverpool don't want to be in that situation. But this is an appointment that I think suits Liverpool. Iriola is, for people that don't know, with Bournemouth, plays a very Jurgen Klopp style brand of football. Now, obviously, that's with Bournemouth. Can he do it with Liverpool? If the Liverpool fans give this guy patience, I think he can produce good football. My only question mark at the moment, the players currently they have aren't quite suited to that pressing style. So there's a lot going on here. I think if they gave him time, he'll be successful, but it might take a couple of transfer windows. But an exciting appointment for Liverpool fans.
This is the thing with football at that level. There isn't the patience
there's
there.
There's no time.
Like,
yeah.
Nobody seems to have the patience.
No, but you go back to Arsenal with Mikel Arteta, different era now, because a lot of his bad losing run happened during COVID with no fans. And I am full belief as an Arsenal fan that he may not have saw that out without with fans in the ground. The fact he managed to do that during COVID was almost strategic from his point of view. But you can see what's happened with Arsenal and staying patient. They've ended up in the Premier League back 7 years under Arteta. So
yeah,
it's weather fans nowadays, and it feels every year people get less patient in this world, not just in sport but in everything. But
people are losing patience with Arsenal. Like, even the people who are not committed to a team, you're just looking at them going, stop annoying me now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sick of being up for you. I'm not even a fan of Arsenal.
Yeah.
And I'm not either, but my son is, like, as I keep banging on about. But I'm kind of tired of them. Stop losing stuff,
yeah.
You know?
I like, this season's going so well. I mean, results-wise, obviously, maybe not the most exciting brand of football, but the Champions League final was a bit of a hard take. But
yeah.
It gives Arsenal a lot to go on. And that's a style of football thing. I think all Arsenal fans are happy with Arteta getting the winning results in the Premier League. It's now, can you make it a little bit more exciting for...
Now, I distracted us from the rugby there when we were talking about Andy Farrell. No, I did that. You're all right. We'll come back to James Lowe, though. What's going on with him?
Yeah, so it looks like he's going to be leaving Leinster. And
why, though?
By all accounts, it's not something he wants. He wants ultimately to stay, and I think Leinster are making a decision. We've also seen it with Kieran Frawley as well, and a lot of Leinster fans feel that the best out half of Leinster currently have will be playing his rugby at Connacht next season. So.
So James Lowe has a year left to run, has he, on his contract? Is that unusual?
It would be unusual to be leaving with a year to go. Yeah, normally you'd wait it out. But I think that just hearing the talks, I don't think Lowe does want to stay. And the talk is that Leinster want to let him go, and that's sort of where the crossroads is at the moment.
So who do they want instead? Is that what's going on?
There's been linked with a number of players, but I'm not sure exactly if there's a replacement there, to be honest. But again, I'll go back to the Frawley situation and speaking to a lot of Leinster fans. Obviously, Leinster have three out halves now, really. Sam Prendergast, Harry Byrne, Kieran Frawley. Kieran Frawley can play a lot of different positions across the back line, which has probably held him back over the last couple of years. And I think Leinster have sort of made an early decision to stick with Prendergast and Harry Byrne. But I guess whichever way they go, people will be unhappy. But I think Frawley sort of suits that. But yeah, James Lowe, that's interesting. And it's also really interesting with Leinster semi-final this weekend. Obviously, they've lost the Champions Cup final, which is the big thing. And they've only, I think, sold 11,000 tickets as of yesterday morning for the Aviva. I think it's clashing with the hurling as well. Yeah, there's just a bit of uncertainty about the futures of the coaching staff and everything going on there, because Leinster, given their resources, probably should have a lot more Champions
Cup. So there's a bit of deflation going on around the fans and perhaps even inside the camp after the loss. So it's hard to go into the semi-final
exactly
with enthusiasm.
Exactly that. Like, I'm expecting them to beat the Stormers and play either the Glasgow or the Bulls in the final and potentially win the URC final. But obviously everybody in Leinster wanted that Champions Cup. And in a weird thing with rugby, like, you imagine the Champions League final being played 3 weeks before the Premier League season ends, it just wouldn't happen. Whereas in rugby, it's happened over the last few years. So it's almost like consolation prize, which is unfair in the URC because it's a brilliant competition, but that's just how Leinster fans feel.
I was having a look there. The Financial Times were reporting on this mad election for the president of Real Madrid. Like, it's just fascinating. So you have the current president, Florentino Perez, right? He's saying, I'm going to get a big signing. That's how he got elected the last time, or the first time, wasn't it? Because he got Luis Figo in within 24 hours or something of signing. But he's saying the club is worth 10 billion now, and in a few years I'll have it worth 20 billion. Like, this is his pitch, which I kind of love. Do you know what I mean? It's so mad.
He's crazy, and he's built the Galacticos that were the mid-2000s, including that Luis Figo transfer from their arch rivals, Barcelona, which was huge news, not just at the time, but there's a great Luis Figo documentary for anyone listening on Netflix. But yeah, Madrid, I think it's his opponent, Riquelme, is actually a Spanish businessman, and he's made headlines because he's basically promised Erling Haaland if he gets there, which you can't really
an evaluation of 30 billion in 10 minutes.
Yeah, but you can see Perez has promised like to spend 150 million euro on an unnamed player, where he's gone ahead and named Erling Haaland. But I guess in this day and age versus Luis Figo a few 20 plus years ago, Man City aren't too happy with their player being named in a
Real Madrid. I can imagine.
So they have threatened, or at least looking at legal action there.
I wonder how Erling feels about it.
I'd say he's very happy, because that just ups his potential contract renewal, because he was linked with Madrid and he sort of picked Manchester City when he left Dortmund. So that's fascinating if he gets in, but I'd expect Perez, just given the amount of say he has in Real Madrid. Some Real Madrid fans aren't happy with him. I mean, he is very much money focused, but look, you can't argue with their Champions League record, if not their league record.
Now, the Women's World Cup qualifiers on this weekend. Parky Cueve. It's this evening, isn't it?
Yeah,
Ireland versus the Netherlands. So what's going to happen there? What's your prediction?
So, like, when we this group first made, Ireland were playing, or basically facing off against Poland for the third spot. But now, after that performance away to Netherlands, we lost narrowly 2-1. I do feel Ireland are closing the gap between those top teams, and Netherlands at home gives Ireland a small opportunity to get something. I mean, the big concern for me is Emily Murphy, but most notably Denise O'Sullivan, are both suspended. Denise O'Sullivan, obviously Cork woman, which have been great for her playing in Parky Cueve. So that's a bit of a blow that could ultimately be the difference. But there's not much between these two sides where there would have been maybe a year ago. So that's huge credit to Carla Ward.
And listen, just before we finish, we're going to hear an awful lot about Katie Taylor this afternoon, because the big announcement is coming. Like, there's no secret about it now, that it's happening, that she is going to be boxing in Croke Park on the 5th of September. Will they have any trouble filling the stadium?
I think if they nail the undercard right, which I'm expecting them to do, and even having a little musical act in there that brings 5,000, get the pricing right, which is the big thing of the three, I think they will
fill it. And make it a family event.
Exactly, as much as you can with boxing. So they've got to nail the fight time, bring it earlier. I'm expecting that without knowing anything. But yeah, the undercard, the pricing is the big thing. And if you manage to really nail that, I think you can. Because her name is huge in Ireland.
I'll definitely go.
So there's two.
No question.
So far,
two
out of the 82.
We're going to be talking about that in the debrief a little later on. So if you are going to go to Katie Taylor in Croke Park, will you let us know on WhatsApp 087 1400 106. Daniel, thank you so much. Daniel Hussey there, sports journalist. Enjoy all the sport over the weekend.
The Clare Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.